Welcome to the Being Cyber podcast. Today's guest is Dave McKenzie. We're going to talk about his career, the importance of community, and some of the work he did during COVID. And let's dive straight into the episode.
Welcome, Dave. Tell us who you are for anyone who doesn't know you.
I'm Dave McKenzie. I have been in security way too long because I have grey hair, which is referred to in the sales terms as gravitas. And yeah, how long? About 10 years in cybersecurity, but like 20 if you start including IT, and more if I'm being truthful. So there you go.
So how did you get into the wonderful world of cyber?
So I worked for nearly 15 years for an IT company. So it was RM Education. And I loved working there because it was a meaningful job. So I'd worked a lot of IT jobs before then. Help desk, running them, doing bits and pieces. Done some really crazy IT support inside clean room environments, and don't touch that because it's an acid bath and you're like, hang on a second, you're standing over an acid bubbling, patching in a Cat 5 lead up on a wall, all that sort of stuff. But it was utterly bizarre because in the end, I ended up working in a couple of different quangos or government offices, and you ended up sitting there going, right, hang on a second, I'm now seeing my tax money in action. It's really, really disappointing. Because in a couple of them, we had the kind of, it's feeling a little chilly in here. Go and grab some of the taxpayers' money and throw it in the furnace, and that'll heat the place up much nicer. So I'd started having my fill there. And then when I came across RM Education, went in there as a contractor, and all of a sudden I was helping teachers teach. So you're making the computer systems work for students and things like that. And all of a sudden you had a job that was fulfilling. So I always liked helping people, but that kind of got diluted slightly as your career goes on, because there's only so many times when you help Jeannie from the office fix a paper jam in her printer because she keeps leaning on it or something along those lines. And so I ended up like in this meaningful job, and it was absolutely brilliant. And during that, I did an awful lot of IT support. I kept going up and up and doing bits and pieces. And then schools started getting hit with ransomware a lot. Now, some of it was ransomware, some of it was the students. I will happily admit that sometimes students are... I once had a teacher that said the entire network's down. I was like, right, what's happened? And they went, well, we were talking to little Johnny in the classroom, and he said he could bring down the network just like that. And we told him to prove it. And I'm sitting, like, staring at the phone going, why? Why would you do this? And little Johnny did a denial of service attack on the Ipswich mail server that was also the domain controller, and used a tool for knocking people off Xbox Live to take out the school network. And that was mildly hilarious because you were just sitting there going, why? Why? Like, they said, don't ask someone to prove it.
Don't double dare a kid.
No, don't double. No, kids. Then ransomware kind of came along, and I ended up doing an awful lot of incident response. Not really knowing at the time it was incident response. And I was building up my own ideas about how to do it. And then I did the CEH back in the day and went, okay, that's all these things. It was like, brilliant. And then I ended up doing vulnerability management programs for them and a whole bunch of pieces I patched. It's only 8,000 servers for WannaCry in a script. It was mildly terrifying. I was sitting in my, at the time we were moving house, so I was actually in my in-laws' dining room on their dining room table on a Sunday afternoon going, I've tested it as much as I possibly can. I've just pushed the run button.
It couldn't have been worse than WannaCry, surely?
Well, it was all about getting them. Yeah, WannaCry had happened, and then everybody needed to be patched for it. So we dealt with all the incidents. It was the patching. And you're like, as the MSP responsible for patching all these servers, suddenly you've got 8,000 servers.
You don't want them to go down again.
You need to patch all of them, and the customers all are demanding that. So they went, yeah, we need to patch them all this weekend. How are we going to do it? You're going to automate it, and it's going to be terrifying. So I did that, but I did a lot of incident response there. And there was lots of horror stories, sad stories, and things like that. And then I got a call out of the blue from somebody that used to work at RM Education that said, you post a lot on Twitter and LinkedIn and Facebook about the things that you're doing with, you know, cyber. Do you want to come do it for real? I'm at a startup that's really cool, and it's doing a lot of really good stuff for good people. And I was like, nobody's going to hire me. Nobody's going to give me. I was a big fish in a small pond that was quite happy. You know, if I didn't want to go into the office that day, this was pre-COVID, so working from home was, oh, you don't do that unless you have a really good reason. But if I wanted to work from home, I could work from home. And so we did I did the interview, but I met the MD, Forum Cyber, and loved the guy. I mean, his passion for what he was doing and stuff like that was just amazing. And at the end of the interview, I mean, I walked in at a startup, so I go in a three-piece suit and tie, and he looks at me and goes,
what are you wearing?
They're all wearing jeans and t-shirt. And he's like, why are you wearing that? I was like, because it's an interview. It's like, this is what I wear to an interview. This is me. I don't know what your culture is and how you expect people to dress, but I dress for an interview. He went, fair enough. And then he asked me a whole bunch of questions. I blagged a few of them, got most of them right. And then he told me he hated me, which was very bizarre for an interview, because most people, you know, send you a polite email or a letter saying they hate you later. But he said, I hate you because I want to hire you for two different jobs. He was like, oh, that sounds positive. But I was like, they're still not going to give me the flexibility I need for doing the school run, and they're not going to give me the money. They're going to want something. It's not going to work. But in the end, all the money aligned, all the flexibility aligned, and the wife looked at me and I went, been there 15 years and I know exactly what I'm doing. Do I want to go and do something shiny and new? And so I went off and did shiny and new, and it was one of the best things I ever did. Did that whole, everybody that left RM, because everybody worked at RM worked there for years, and everybody that left always came back and went, should have left sooner. And I was like, I've still to this day, until now, never said it, but yeah, should have left sooner. But in the end, I left at a really good time, got a really good place, and I got to take Quorum Cyber from this, the kind of startup small company, into someone that people respected and people wanted to go and work there, and we were growing and growing and growing. And yeah, I was there for like 3.5 years building that up, and it was kind of awesome fun. So we got to do loads of community stuff, went through rounds of funding. So, and let's face it, when you work in a startup, it can be big and stressful, but you get to do lots of things that you wouldn't normally get to do. In fact, I had one consultant that said, I want to do more. He's like, great, but you do realize that you've done incident response. You've gone to a site and done the full incident response for a customer. But if you worked anywhere else in an established, one of the big ones, you'd be the guy that held the door open for the guy carrying the luggage that got the guy that got the coffee for the incident responder. You wouldn't have got anywhere near the responsibility and the privilege of doing what we do. So yeah, you have to remember that you're in a startup. You've still not got that many years under your belt, and you've got to do an awful lot of interesting things. So working in a startup, yes, it's a risk at times, because not every startup makes it. But yeah, it was very, very interesting. But I got to go and do senior management stuff and run an entire section of a company, and I got to go and deal with a whole bunch of things that, you know, just were completely out with the technical realm or the cybersecurity realm that I was used to. So I got to go and worry about senior management stuff and like, you know, like managing directory type stuff. And that was quite interesting, and a massive acceleration in what was, I'll admit, a languishing career, because I got really comfy sitting at RM for like 14 years. But I got to re-accelerate and got to go and do interesting stuff. So yeah, I got to help a lot of good people doing good things. So that was Quorum Cyber.
I think everyone should work at a startup at some point. So, you know, I've got my own experience with recruitment startups, which was interesting from a corporate to a startup. But yeah, working with Eliza now, it's a small business. It's very much, I know it's not a startup, it's 5 years, but you see so much, and you can make so much change, you can make so much impact, but also you get sort of the rope to hang yourself at times.
You do, but also you also get to shrug and go, well, what did I know? It's not like anybody else in the room knew any better. So whereas other places, more established places, would look at it and go, you're fired, you don't know what you're doing. Everybody shrugs and goes, let's get on with it and fix it. And that was always the good thing about, like, with that building everything. And I mean, yeah, when I was at Quorum, I was a consultant, I was an incident responder, I was a SOC manager, I was a head of managed services, I was a senior engineer, I was a senior analyst, I was the trainer, I was the sales guy. I did like everything, and it was awesome. And you never knew what you were going to be doing from day to day. Massively stressful, really long hours, but massively rewarding. And you got to help people join the company and build a career. I got to interview people that there were several people where I sit and they're going, I have no idea why I'm interviewing you. This should be the other way around at best for me. You are a rock star and yet I am interviewing you and you have to be really nice to me because I'm the head of managed services. I could say yes or no whether you get the job. And so, yeah, it was, everybody should experience working in a startup, even just for a summer, just to see what it's like, because it is absolutely crazy. But you learn so much and you widen your horizons way more than single, unless you've got this massive entrepreneurial spirit or you're really lucky. Startup is the closest way you'll see to be able to get that with. I had to worry about the entire company-wide HR stuff. You're like, why would some random techie that's good at DNS suddenly have to go and worry about these things? But that's what ended up happening. And it was amazing. Yeah, I got a ton of new war stories to add to the collection of incident response nightmares and things that I'd had. But you got to do a lot of good for people in the company and for the customers of the company. And that was absolutely amazing. And massively springboarded me on to, one, doing lots of things in the cyber community. And between that and Quorum Cyber, ended up landing me, the next job, which became that head of cyber defense for National Gas, or National Grid going into National Gas. So building critical national infrastructure defenses for, the guy working in RM, no chance of ever be getting that job.
Yeah, so we've skipped a little bit because I do want to ask you about the COVID work that you did, because that's got to have been interesting.
COVID was bizarre.
Was that volunteer? Was that?
Yeah. So there was something like 3 or 4 different cyber COVID groups kicking around. There was a cyber defense league, and there was a super secret squirrel one that was happening in America, that if you weren't friends with the high hegians of Microsoft and those sorts, you just didn't get to go and play in that one. But I ended up volunteering for 2, but ended up being in the steering committee for 1 of them. And it just became this really bizarre. It was like, all right, how do we share threat intelligence about COVID-based threats across? So because scammers and phishers and everybody were starting to use lots of COVID-based lures. And so I ended up working with a whole bunch of we had people that will not be named and that would not tell you which branch of government they were in, but they were. We were working with some of the nominate IP guys and stuff like that, and really high up ISP people that were just sitting going, hey, look, we've seen this bad thing. And what would normally have taken an awful lot of red tape and months of haggling and asking for something to be taken down was gone an hour later. It was utterly big. We were all massively pulled together. But it was okay, how are we going to organize it? Who's good at talking? Who's good at X, Y, and Z? And a whole bunch of us kind of came together. And we went, right, okay. I was like, look, I'll organize all the tech stuff on the side here. And I'm happy to do evangelism and talks, etc. And yeah, and it was fantastic. And it was the Quad 9, so the 9.9.9.9. People, I reached out to them on a whim, I wonder, it's like, hey, how do I'm creating this threat intelligence source that is of COVID scams, of bad actors using COVID lures, etc. Can I give you that and get it in? And ended up getting it onto there. So we ended up having a whole bunch of quite high up tech firms giving us a whole bunch of stuff for absolutely nothing. Stuff that would be hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of tech in the background. A lot of the companies didn't want to be named. They said, look, we're happy to do it, but this isn't about this isn't about publicity and stuff like that. Look, just, but yeah, you had all the guys from Alien Vault and stuff like that, just all the best toys in the world for threat intelligence gathering and public processing and public, and all just suddenly appeared. And then you also had all these other people that could actually make people disappear from the internet at the punch of a button, all just working together. It was absolutely fantastic. And so basically every, we were meeting twice a week, right? What are we doing? And I had some really talented programmers creating things. And we just ended up with this massively successful threat feed. And we had awareness campaigns, and we had guys from the incident response teams at New York city council and stuff like that, you had everybody from like hospitals and stuff like that, and they're all just like, yeah, we'll take your stuff. And you were just sitting there going, this is just amazing. In the end, it kind of petered out because it was actually going to, they really wanted to try and keep it going. But the once the COVID bubble burst, essentially, it became that, right, okay, everybody went back to their normal lives. But yeah, for a span of that time, all of a sudden, and I've got friends that I'd still in touch with that I never in a million years would have ever met. And, you know, can reach out to them and say, hey, what about this? And you're just thinking, yeah. And it was just a bunch of people that came together to do a really good thing. So we did threat intelligence, the COVID leaders were doing takedowns.
So when you say threat intelligence, do you mean like to protect hospitals from cyber attacks whilst they're already down? Or?
No, we gave the feed out to anyone. So anyone that actually used 9.9.9.9 as their DNS, we then automatically were protecting them against all these, every bad IP, domain, hash. We fed everything into, and so you could take our feed and update your own firewalls. But if you just used 9.9.9.9 as your DNS, and a lot of people were at the time, we were automatically producing it, but we were producing tens of thousands of IP addresses a day, and basically people were being protected from them. So that was a massive impact. And the team at Quad 9 were absolutely fantastic, because once you sign on to them, you get a whole bunch of API access, and you can actually download the stats of all the blocks that you'd created and all the stuff you'd done. And so you were seeing hundreds of thousands of blocks coming in a day, and you're like, yeah, we did that. And so it was great to be able to go back to all the volunteers, because we had like hundreds of people doing bits and pieces, whether it be just somebody posting in, I've seen this in the Slack, or whether it was, you know, people actually programmatically doing X, Y, and Z, converting Alien Vault OTX things into other things. And I had this massive, lovely process that would validate things. So somebody nominated someone that would go through a whole bunch of automated processes to check X, Y, and Z, and then cleaned. And then if it was any suspicion, it would be manually reviewed. And you had a team of people manually reviewing potential bad IPs. And yeah, you were able to go back to, you know, those people and say, look, good news. Yesterday, you stopped 300,000 connections to bad IPs or bad domains. And you're like, wow, I did that. You know, like, and yeah, it wasn't without controversy internally, but it was quite interesting because you had a bunch of, like, suddenly you were working with a whole bunch of people from different countries. And so you were dealing with a whole bunch of different cultures and things like that. All of a sudden, everybody really, really wanted to help. And so, and everybody thought they had their own way of doing it. So you're sitting trying to shepherd, I think there was like 2,500 people in that Slack at one. We were hitting the limits and things. And most people would join and then never reappear. But you had a fair number of, we had a community officer, because we had to have a team that was actually just looking after the Slack. And making sure that people knew how to contact and how to contribute and things like that. We had way more people than we knew what to do with. But if you added a single IP address, if you said, hey, I got a phishing email, here's the IP address, it could go through the process, appear in there, and then you'd be blocking it. Like, within 24 hours, it'd be getting blocked worldwide by thousands of people. And you're like, this is absolutely amazing. So it was great. And
at least when you look back and go, during COVID, because, you know, at some point we will be in the history books as, you know, 2020, the year that we locked down, you'll be able to say, I wasn't breaking lockdown, I was helping protect the world from cyber threat. That's pretty cool.
So, yeah, between that and InfoSec Happy Hour every Friday, where, you know, we all got drunk and tried to, like, just make sense of what was going on in the world. Yeah, I mean, those two groups kept me going, and yeah, like the number of friends and contacts and people that I made during that, absolutely amazing. So COVID did a lot of things to the world, and it wasn't all bad. It was absolutely terrible, but it has moved society on, and it has done a lot of very interesting things to our industry, to people. And so, yeah, I'd much rather we could do it without the deaths and the illnesses and the panic and, you know, the disruption of people losing their jobs. It was it fast-forwarded society in a lot of ways.
Massive digital revolution.
Yeah, let's face it. I mean, look at how working from home is now. My wife came in
tonight after going into the office and said, it's very, very bizarre. I mean, she worked for years in IT support and went into the office every single day without fail. And she's like, I don't understand how anybody can work in an office all the time. The air conditioning does weird things, even to your skin and to your hair. And it's just, yeah. And you're like, well, some people still prefer to go into the office. But I must admit, it is very interesting.
I wouldn't like to be 18 or however old people are when they enter the workforce and be working from home. That'd be very difficult from being in school, which is obviously very much, or university, which is normally very people focused. So I do understand the, depending on your age group, depending on your background, there's different working patterns. But also, you know, the 18-year-olds that I know, they don't want to be 9 to 5. They think that's so outdated. They'd much rather be maybe 3 or 4 days a week, or later hours or earlier hours, or get the work done. You know, it's different for everyone, isn't it? And I think it has fast-forwarded.
Yeah, it has. And as, let's face it, society always keeps evolving, and you get this, what is normal for one generation. I mean, I have absolutely no problem wearing a tie. I can wear a shirt and tie and not think about it at all, whereas other people I know would be gagging at the thought of wearing a tie. And I was like, I did IT support in a clean room space suit with a three-piece suit and tie underneath said space suit. And I crawled under desks in the filthiest places wearing a three-piece suit and tie, and did nearly get my tie eaten by an auto teller because I worked in the Bank of Scotland for a while. With your gap year, and you got to play with the fraud detection stuff like in auto tellers, and inside an auto teller, an awful lot of things that whir and things that pull. And if your tie gets in there, that could be quite sore. I did, at the time, I had hair down to my ass nearly, and I did lose a bit of hair as well. And it once came at the ponytail, and it was like, ow. But yeah, there's, you know, but nowadays you're like, well, why would you ever wear a tie? You're like, because it just was normal.
You see, my going into the office, knowing that I should dress up, I should wear a dress, that's fine, I could wear a jacket. Going to a conference where most people are in jeans, which I'm 5 foot, as you know, wearing trainers, I've only done that since I've had children, that's more uncomfortable for me. I'm like, I have no idea how to be cool. What do people wear? Like, I dress like a mother. If I can put a dress on and a suit jacket, that's normal because I was corporate for so long.
It's very like school and school uniforms. When you have work, you have a uniform that you're comfortable in and you stop thinking about it. Now, there's certain rules. I mean, when you go into banking and they still do the whole, you know, how expensive is your shoes and your watch and your pen and all that. Those things still happen, but for most people, they no longer have that. And so you end up going, but besides Cambridge, like one of the things I added to the choose your own talk was the what do you wear to work? Because it's an interesting thing. You sit there and say, you wear what makes your customer comfortable, not what makes you comfortable, because it's your customer that needs to trust you.
And it's them that's paying you.
And if they can't trust somebody that wears jeans and a t-shirt, then wear a shirt and tie. Doesn't matter what you want, it's you're selling your trust to the customer, so it has to be what the customers, and if the customer cannot see past what you're wearing, then you can't communicate with them. And if you can't communicate with them, what are you doing in the room? Because our job is about communicating risks to people.
100%. Yeah, that was a really good talk. I liked that one. So tell me about National Gas. Tell me about you went from being head of managed services to working in an end-user environment in a really heavily regulated industry. So there's National Grid, which became National Gas. Is that right? There was the separation there.
Yeah, so National Grid were planning on divesting. So the gas, National Gas Transmission, was a division of National Grid. So National Grid is an American company, which is hilarious when you're talking in the pub with, you know, you people going, no, it's our pylons. You're like, no, actually, it's the Americans' pylons. And to be honest, in a large degree, it's Americans and Australians and a few Canadians. But in the end, you still go, yeah, but they were divesting it off. And as part of that divestment, essentially, they had to build an entirely new enterprise. So we were suddenly, as somebody I'd worked with in the past and that I knew heavily from the community, had reached out and said, hey, look, I need somebody that can come in and build an entire blue team, the full SOC, incident response, vuln management, the lot, do you fancy a new challenge? And I was like, hang on. So you're saying critical national infrastructure? That sounds really sexy on the CV. Sort of greenfield, because you're building it from scratch. Apparently the budgets, there's no limitation in the budget as long as you can articulate what the problem is and that your regulator agrees and they give you the money for it. So the whole having to convince a board to give you money they don't want to give you doesn't exist. It's just a different funding mechanism, but there's no, nobody says no as long as you've got a good argument. I'm like, well, I always have a good argument, so sure. So it was like a, yeah, unlimited, not unlimited funding, but not a problem with money. They want to build it all brand new using up-to-date methods of doing SOCs and doing incident response, all the shiny tools, and would you like to come and build it? You can build it using your own team. I was like, yes, that sounds like an amazing opportunity.
That's a dream role.
And I was sitting looking going, would I be really, really stupid to turn this down? And the answer was yes, of course I'd be really, really stupid to turn it down. And so I went into National Grid, found what National Grid did. They do an amazing, but they are a group company that's worldwide. And so they're trying to do things at scale and building the new gas thing. Go, right, okay, we can leave a bunch of the stuff that was what you class as legacy SOC thinking and build it as if you were building a brand new SOC, because we were building a brand new SOC from the ground up. All the newest ways of thinking about incident response, thinking about risk, thinking about how you deal with what signals you bring in, what risks you're trying to do and how you're dealing with it. And I was like, yeah, that's an amazing thing. So I was like, yeah, absolutely fine. And so I went in. So I get to build the entire strategy. So day one was the, so what will you need? Like, right, okay, let's talk about what a bad day looks like. And I have a conversation with most, whether it is the MSSP and you're bringing in a new customer, or whether you're just talking to somebody in the pub that you don't know what you do. What's a bad day look like for you? And if a company can't articulate to you what a bad day in a, like ransomware in your company takes out all your computers, what does that look like? How much does that cost you? How bad is it? How quickly do you need it back up and running before the wheels really start coming off the pram for the organization? And a saddeningly amount of people and companies do not know what that answer is. And if you don't know what that answer is, the first thing you need to now go and do is go, we need to go and write that down. Because if you don't know what that looks like, then you don't know how much money you should be spending to make it not happen. Or at least be able to deal with it if it does happen. So it's that if you can't understand what it costs when it goes down, then you certainly cannot understand how much money or what you should be doing to prevent it. So, but when I went into National Grid and asked the question of National Gas, they came back with some really, they immediately went, there you go, there's all the answers there. I'm like, oh, right, brilliant. They've really looked at this. And of course they have, because they're a heavily regulated industry, but also they understand risk.
Yeah, and if the gas goes off, lights go off.
Yes, if grids have a big health and safety risk thing, you know, they have that whole number of, you know, that they don't quite have the physical board that says number of days since someone died. But they have that mentality of, like, you know, people die on the job, you know, it has been X. I mean, so turning that into, well, cyber is just another type of risk. When you explain that, they go, yeah, brilliant, we understand that. Let's go and do it. So they did a lot of risk analysis, so they understand that stuff. But yeah, the national, what most people don't realize is that on a still day, on a still cloudy day, 60-70% of the UK's electricity supply comes from gas-fired power station. So if gas disappears on a cloudy day, you're in overcast and still.
Which is pretty much most days.
Solar doesn't work, wind doesn't work, and then all of a sudden 70% of your electricity supply suddenly comes from gas. So you're saying, it's not just if gas goes wrong, it's not just gas that goes wrong. It's not like that, I won't be able to cook, it's okay, I'll use the microwave or the air fryer. Electricity stops working as well, so you get rolling blackouts. And there's a whole bunch of, like, you suddenly get all this interesting stuff about the, there's a study that shows that if you, if you lose X amount of critical services, how long it'll be before.
Is it 3 days before they start rioting?
Yeah, society breaks down. Like, you know, we're all running about in the street, smacking each other with baseball bats and eating the gooey stuff. It becomes that bad. And you're like, wow. And they've got all this stuff. You think, well, what does a bad day look like? And they go, there you go. Here's the billions of pounds a day that it'll cost. Here's the list of like, so if gas goes off, then you've got this, right, okay, suddenly you've not got heating. If it's a cold winter's day, then you've got like how many like deaths you have.
Or illnesses, overrunning the hospitals, but there's no gas, there's no electricity.
Yeah, And so and in the end, they have to go and put numbers on these things, and they have the numbers on them. And when you look at it, you go, at this point, I have unlimited money to spend on cyber defences because the how bad it would be if it went wrong is so horrific. And so there's lots of really interesting thinking, and you go, right, let's start removing cyber things from, like, let's just remove it. So there's lots of weird things that you can do, remotely operated valves, and they go, yeah, these are really good because we can do X, Y, and Z. And they go, but do we need them? It's like, is there a safety reason to have them? It's like, no. Well, then make a guy go out with a spanner because it's way more safer than it is to have it remotely operated just because we feel like we can do it.
I was just going to say, it must be quite hard to, like, in your mind, I know, not really, but you've got unlimited budget because you've got the business case. You know, the business case is lights go out, blackouts, death. You know, at the end of the day, end of life is a chance. How do you not get, not power hungry, but right, I have unlimited budgets. Let's get all the shiny things. Let's get the blinky management porn. I'm not going to name somebody on the podcast that provides blinky management porn, but...
You get somebody in like me that doesn't want all the shiny things. He just wants things that work well. And then you go, right, I only want stuff that works. I don't want three things doing the same job. And you also have to remember that you're spending the taxpayers' money to fix these problems. So one, it really needs to work to keep them safe. And two, let's not go waste your own tax money. So, but yeah, it's a horrendous amount of responsibility. There's a massive amount of stress there. But there's a really good team of people that, like, from the engineers that are out on like remote sites in a field all the way back into the head office that look after this stuff, and they all really understand how important it is what they're doing. And so you get a really, there is no argument around whether you should use a POW workstation or not. Lots of companies understand that privileged access workstation is such a good idea, but God, that means bringing in another laptop. Guys in those offices will wander around with four laptops if that's what's required, because that's what's required, and it just is. It's just needed. And yeah, it was a very interesting gig to build that strategy, to build it all up, and then sit and go, right, here's the hiring plan, there's that. Right. There you go, it's done. That's me. Enjoy. I mean, it's still an ongoing thing. In the end, the person that'll end up doing like my job needs to live in Warwick. So it was like, all right, okay, that's fine. I can build you all the pieces and do all the pieces, but my kids don't want, well, my wife doesn't want to live in Warwick because the kids go to school here and we're next to the thing. So that's fine. But building it was a massive privilege to build and design all that.
Yeah. And that's nice as a contractor to come in, do that, and go, right, my work's done. BAU. You'd be bored in a business as usual role.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, there's always something. There's like, you've got satellite comms. I mean, there was like, you know, like random incidents because a French news crew used the wrong frequency in their satellite news uplink. And that causes like a blip on the satellite. So you think, right, okay, full incident response because we've lost one of the lines of communications to these sites. And you're like, yeah, there's always an incident, but it's because you have to be so overly sensitive to them. But while still maintaining that, yeah, you can't ever get blasé about them. So it's like, you know, full instant response, going to do the report and do that. Somebody's going to go around and kick French news company's backside for doing the wrong thing. You're like, but it's what they have to worry about. And when I started, the war in Ukraine was just like kind of kicking off and all that. And so, you know, these were all the threats that we had on our board going, right, okay, you know, what are you going to do extra because of, you know, this, and like, right.
There's now an enhanced threat profile.
Yeah, right, okay. In a lot of ways, our threat profile doesn't change in the cyber bit, but in this bit, we will have to up things. And so it was it was never a dull moment. Massive transformation program, massive critical national infrastructure interest and build. So yeah, it was one of those great projects. You just sit and go, yep, did that. That was kind of cool.
What's next?
Yeah, and it became a, right, what are you going to do next? So I went completely the other way.
Yeah. So tell me about Damn Good Security. I love the idea of Damn Good Security. Who's your customer?
Damn Good Security came off the back of the, right, what big project am I going to look at next? And while I'm waiting on a big project, what can I do? And I had a firm that was a friend of the family reach out and say, hey, have you got some time in the new year to come and talk to us? I'm like, who are you? What do you want? And sure, Hal's happy to talk. Getting me shut up is generally the problem. But as anyone running the conference and me overrunning my talk, I don't overrun my talks generally. I'm normally quite good at it. Yeah. Sales calls, turns out, no, I'll keep the customer on there forever until they say. But it became I went in and went, right, okay, you're a firm and you need cyber help. Why me? Why are you not going with this recommended provider by your local organizer? Because we're too small. It's like, but I know how much money you make, because before I go into a company, I always go to a company's house and have a quick look to see who's the directors, what do they look like, and how much money's in the bank. Because it just lets you know, like, if you should be talking about 20 quid or 200 grand or 2 million. Because, you know, if you don't talk the right amount of money at a potential customer, they're not necessarily going to take you seriously, or they're going to be so scared of your numbers that they run away. So you just think, all right, okay, where do I pitch this? What are they looking for? Are they looking for me to turn up in jeans and a t-shirt and, you know, wipe a desk? Or are they looking for an entire team of people to come in and do X, Y, Z? So I sat and I went, look, you're not short of budget. And they went, no, but we're really small. So high cash business, enough money in the bank, but less than 20 people in the organization. There's not a domain controller. And so when they looked at the first cyber provider they went to, they spoke to, they went, you've been recommended by so high. And they went, you're too small. We don't care. Well, they didn't say we don't care. They just went, look, you're too small. You don't need us. Thanks very much. Goodbye. And meanwhile, that company didn't know what to do. So they had a very basic question of the, when people work from home, should they use a VPN? What, to connect to the office? Like, no, just to protect them on the internet. I'm like, no. I said, but what about MFA for your office 365? I said, well, yeah, we've got that turned on for most people. Stop talking about VPNs. Let's go back to the MFA. I need you at the end of this intro call to go and speak to the person that does your IT and say, turn MFA on for everybody. Because that's your biggest risk right now. I can tell you, it's the biggest risk for most organizations. You're using Office 365, you're using G Suite. Let's face it, just about everybody's got email and you're probably using one of the two of them. And you need to turn MFA on because anyone on the world can try to log in as you. And I went, oh, right, yeah, we should definitely do that. Like, there you go. Go and do that. Don't worry about VPNs. And so I went in and had this conversation with them. They just went, yeah, look, we don't know who to ask for advice. We don't know who to trust. Now, when you type in cybersecurity provider, there's thousands of them. And that is, a mixture of IT providers' faults, Microsoft's fault. And the reason I say Microsoft's fault is Microsoft produced Azure Sentinel, or Microsoft Sentinel as it's called now. That allowed anyone to spin up a SIEM in 5 minutes. And suddenly anybody could become a full MSSP with 24/7 incident response capability when it's a guy in his bedroom. And I know, because I've spoken to a couple of consultants, and I went and looked at their email address, and then went and looked at their website, and you're like, this sounds like you have 500 people working for you. Because it's, quite frankly, a clone.
There's no legislation, is there? There's no regulation.
Yeah, it's a clone of Quorum Cyber's website. It's a clone of BlueVoyant's website. It's a clone of Arctic Wolf. It's a clone of that security company. There's, you know, all the right words are there. 24/7, trust, partner. We can do this. We can do everything. And anybody could do it. So this weird thing of any company could get a SIEM now, because it used to be QRadar, Splunk, or open source, and everybody was terrified. But yeah, all the big people were going, yeah, I will spend 50 million on Splunk.
Yeah, and pay for your licensing fees and your data ingestion fees, and to pay to host your own, you know, events per second. Yeah.
Yeah, Splunk and QRadar, Splunk especially, was just the only player that a lot of big companies would talk about or even consider. And it was just horrendously expensive. And so like a sock build would take 9 months because you had to go and procure the tin and then get it installed in a data center and do all these things. You had all this stuff. Then Microsoft came along and went, here's one in the cloud. Thanks, bye. And we were like, brilliant. And to be honest, Quorum Cyber used log analytics beforehand. And so they were early adopters or previewers of what they were doing. But it became that, yeah, you could build something in the cloud. And suddenly any law firm, plumbers, pension firm, you name it, they could actually afford now to get a SIEM. And I once went to an office for a customer and they went, yeah, we want to do this. It's like, okay, give me a login. Right, there you go. Right, okay, that's the SIEM done. Went, no, stop, what? And I had to uninstall their Microsoft Sentinel and reinstall it because they haven't been looking at the screen when I pushed the button. And so they didn't see it installed and they wanted to see it installed. I'm like, well, it's fine, sure, uninstalled it all. I went, but then you can put it back on. And you're like, there you go. And you're sitting going, yeah, so you had this, anybody can become a managed service provider, a managed security service provider now, or maybe.
One slight point, a log aggregator is not a SIEM.
It is not.
You need your network visibility and your endpoint, your network traffic, your endpoint visibility to get the full security visibility to be a SIEM. A log aggregator is not a SIEM.
It does not, but a lot of people can stand up and say that it is, and that's the problem.
Yes, a lot of people lie.
I mean, we used to make changes in the Quorum Cyber. I don't know if you guys have seen it. We used to make changes in the Quorum Cyber website, and you could literally go and look at where, if you made some new comment on something, you could see it being replicated around all these different websites, and you're like, this is just ridiculous.
It's fraud.
Well, no, because you put it on the website and it's not copyrighted, so it becomes, and you're just sitting going, but yeah, it was, you're just sitting going, and there were more than a few where you sit there and go, this is like word for word what we've got. We've just changed.
You should play like, did you ever in a sales team play like the hot potato? We had to say a word and just see if you get it on other companies' websites just to troll them.
No, I've never played that, but I'm going to now.
I can't believe you didn't see that opportunity. Just be like, oh, word salad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be honest, we used to play it. Occasionally, I may have played that game with in a sales pitch for a customer. Can you say the word X?
And get them to repeat it.
Well, no, just some random outlandish words and just go the, and yeah, I was good at that game though, because I can slot a random sentence in anywhere and just keep moving. And
yeah, just carry on without laughing.
Yeah, just keep moving.
You need the poker face. Yeah.
Everybody, you can now, if you Google cybersecurity provider, who do you trust? And when it comes down to it, we are in the business of selling trust. People need to trust us. Otherwise, there's no point in engaging with a provider that you have anything other than 100% trust in. Because we see everything, potentially. As a security provider, we know where your secrets are, how much they're worth, and how you can get to them. Like, that's, you need trust there. And if a small company's sitting there looking, going, look, we have a problem. We know that we need to worry about things. We know that we don't understand the difference between MFA and VPN and why one's more important than the other. Who do we trust? And so in the end, it became a family and a friend connection that became, you know, the way they got trust advice that they could, you know, act on. But they just have absolutely no idea. And back in my days of IT support, one of the biggest banes of my life and the things that I used to go around mopping up after what I called the man in a van. And because schools don't have a massive IT budget, so either you get a semi-retired good IT person, you get a ex-student that's kind of moved their way up through, or you get random guys that are in a van going around doing the bare minimum and charging as much as a school can afford to pay. I used to hate, because those guys used to go in, they would blame us for everything. You know, like, oh yeah, that's definitely their fault. You should go speak to them and they'd be gone. And you're forever going in and fixing, going, just what is this guy thinking? He's done this and that. You have to go in and undo a whole bunch of work that they've done. And then meanwhile, you're trying to explain to the school that doesn't understand the techie what you're talking about, going, look, that guy's useless. So the man in a van concept of the, a guy that's just coming around, just doing enough. He's got a nod and a wave and a smile and a, you know, the, you know, you're just like, yeah, a wee bit of gift of the gab. And then he moves on and you're just like, yeah, hate that person. I hate the person that presents as being an expert when they're not. If somebody doesn't know something, I don't expect everybody to know everything, but don't lie to me. It's the worst thing in the world to pretend to know something as an expert. That's lying. If you think you're an expert and you're not, then you're kidding yourself, and that too is dangerous. But yeah, it's even worse when you're knowingly just going around and you're essentially fleecing as many people as you can to get like that. Okay, if I can get 100 customers and they all pay me 20 quid a week to pop around for 5 minutes, and you're like, yeah, what value are you bringing? You know, like, no.
Have some pride.
Yeah, and it just, but they don't care because they're just in it for the, you know, how many different, you know, and they just go, yeah, I've got enough customers and I'm getting these little dribs and drabs. And then I'll go in and go, that's going to cost you. And you're like, oh, right, really? It's like, come on. So just to hate them. And now we've got that all over the security industry. You've got every man and their dog pretending to be a security expert.
And they all pop up from nowhere.
I know. And you're just sitting there going, you're like, but, and you're just sitting there going, and it's you just sit there and go, there are so many really clever, bright and brilliant people in our industry, but there's so many people that look at it and go, there's money over there, so I'm definitely going to be over there. And you're like, yeah, you're not, you're making the problems worse. You're not making things better. And the rest of us end up picking up the pieces. And you're like, hey, yeah, it's not great.
I think there's, we take so much pride in getting people to trust us, yet there seems to be a phase on social media of get like ripping other people down, which isn't helping with credibility at all.
It's not. And I was never one for on social media jumping on, like, you know, jumping on someone. Essentially, there are plenty of people that, like, you will could start an argument in an empty room. Some of them might even be the S and DGS at times. But ultimately, yeah, as long as you're doing it from a good place, then fantastic. But, you know, people that pile on and the gatekeeping and all that nonsense, I have absolutely no time for that. If you need a hand, if you want to ask a question and you're like, it's like, I don't care. I don't care what my job title is. Like, just come and ask me and I'll give you a hand with whatever. It's, you know, and that's the kind of B-sides spirit, and that's awesome.
I think having healthy debate is good. We need to be able to argue with each other, but when it becomes school-like, there's no rational discord.
When it becomes about the personality rather than the topic. So Scott and I remember arguing about whether the InfoSec or the cyber community is large or small. And it was a really interesting evening because we were on a panel. So we had Scott, myself, James Bowers was, I think he was like running the panel and asking the questions. And I was like, there was a bunch of us. And there was next to nobody in the audience because we were doing it online. It was on Gather. And so you could literally see like three people sitting in the audience. There was more people on the stage than there were in the audience. But it essentially just ended up being a group of people just having a good, lively debate about things. And Scott and I were arguing backwards and forwards about whether everybody knows everybody in cyber or whether it's just echo chambers of little puddles or bubbles of people. And he was arguing it's really small, everybody knows everybody. I'm like, no, because I know, like, I'm reasonably new in the community thing, so I know next to nobody. Some people know me, some people don't. Fine. But it is just, if you believe that you are the entire universe and everybody you know is everybody, then that's, you know, that's what you believe. So I was like, no, I'm very big on that. There'll be plenty of people who are not on social media that, you know, don't go to conferences. There's tons of cyber people that you don't know. Now, the world keeps proving me wrong since that argument. I mean, that's fine. Just keep coming across people that I know now in different places.
Is it 6 degrees of separation?
I'm still sticking to my guns, even though the world wants to prove me wrong over and over and over again. But I still go, no, there is the, you know, there's lots of pockets of different communities. There's, I was listening to a podcast that of some, like, somebody interviewing some other famous American InfoSec person that I've never heard of. But if you'd let it, but according to the podcast, the second coming of Christ, apparently, and everybody knows him and everybody completely respects him. I was like, I've never heard of you in my life, but I'll listen to what you've got to say because you're on a podcast and you've been interviewed. So it might be interesting. So yeah, it was one of these ones where you just say, well, yeah, everybody knows everybody, not necessarily true, but the community allows you to actually build a bunch of people that you trust. And so even as we start DGS and it's a brand new company, damn good security, I was like, oh, damn, it's a bit of an interesting, but everybody loves it, which is as a name, which is great, because it was either going to be a love it or hate it. But yeah, we've had like, you know, we didn't try to do anything, but we've got customers coming to us already. And we're like, right, okay, brilliant. As soon as somebody sends me a signed PO, I'll be even happier. But, you know, it's just that we're starting. But we've already got a whole bunch of people that we know that if somebody comes up and says, we need this, and we go, well, none of us have got the bandwidth to do that right now or the skills, but we know him and we know her and we know them. Brilliant. Let's get them to go and do it. So somebody wants a whole bunch of red teaming done. I've got like five people that are sitting going, I'll do it. You can call me DGS if you like. And was like, yeah, was like, somebody needs 24/7 SOC monitoring. I know a security company that might be able to help me with that.
We also do 9 to 5 and 1 hour a day, depending on what you need.
But yeah, it's the, we're trying to build this thing where our customers trust us and then we use people we trust to deliver the services if we can't do it ourselves. Obviously, we'll deliver as much as we possibly can ourselves, but in the end, so far, 2.5 people, but we're building it. And yeah, it'll be interesting. I have no idea if you can provide the level of service that small companies need at the budget that small companies can afford and make a successful business. So we're going to do some things for big companies to help subsidize the small companies and see how that goes.
It's an exciting challenge.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
So, final question. I always ask everybody this. Either what piece of advice has stuck with you throughout your career, or what advice would you give to somebody who wants to join the cyber industry now?
One, as an old person and you try to give people advice, they will all look at you with glazed eyes and go, yeah, the old guy's saying stuff. And I have stood in front of a whole bunch of people and went, I know that you are not listening to me right now, but in 10 years' time, you're going to go, Dave told me that. So I should have listened. Nothing I can do about that because that's the way humans work. Ultimately, the advice I have for people is trust. Build yourself. If you're going to build yourself a brand or you're going to do something, everything you do ends up being, you have to believe in what you're doing. And people have to trust that you're going to be able to do what you're going to do. As soon as you start losing people's trust, stop being in this business, because ultimately it's all about trust. So for me, it's the make sure that as you're building yourself out, you're building people and you're bringing people along with you. You're not ripping people down, because if you're being negative about people and you're bringing people down, or you're doing a pure sales silver bullet job on someone, as soon as you start losing that trust, the community stops trusting you, your customers stop trusting you. And at that point, why are you in this business? Because ultimately we're there to help protect people and do things. And you can only do that from a position of trust. So everything that you can do and that you can empathize with people and that you can build trust, work on that. Be not true to yourself, but true to everything. Because ultimately, if you're going to bullshit, it's going to backfire on you at some point. You're going to think that you've got the gift of the gab and you're doing absolutely amazing. And then at some point, you're going to get found out. And if you're not, yeah, it's just there. So for me, it's that whole do unto others as you would have them do to you. It's bizarre. It's a Bible quote. But it actually, it's a not bad way to live. And it's a really good way to run a cybersecurity.
Yeah. Now, we haven't talked about, which I thought you would, Hack Thursday. What's Hack Thursday for anyone who doesn't know, who's in the Scotland vicinity? Because, you know, it's just one place.
I thought, Rosie, that you didn't know what Hack Thursday was because you've not been to visit us yet.
I am coming in April. I was going to come in March before Gerard leaves, but I have a conference to run the week after.
So one of the many things that we try to do in the community is try and bring people along. And we were finding that the DEF CON Glasgow group was getting more and more heavily student focused, and a lot of professionals weren't going to it because they were just seeing it as students either wanting you to buy them a drink or looking for a job. And so it became we want something with a bit of structure to it that's got a large element of fun to it, but that allowed cyber professionals in Scotland to get together. And there's Cyber Scotland Connect, which is a massively cool group, but it's a bit serious. And it's, I mean, it's really good. I really enjoy it. It's a great way to meet people. But sometimes you just want to have a bit of fun. And so Hack Thursday was kind of born out of a bunch of us coming together and saying, what can we do something? And so we ended up creating this format. Third Thursday every month, we meet. There's a particular pub that we've got a function room in. And we have a talk. And then we do, the council are really nice people. And then we do Slideshow Roulette. So Slideshow Roulette is that we give up a bunch of really random slides. And people from the audience have come up and they have to present it, which is hilarious and is really interesting, because see, if you've never done a talk before, nobody expects, and I'll admit, sometimes there's like absolutely no chance you can make a cybersecurity topic out of what has appeared on the slide. The Council of Really Nice People is a story from a certain conference that somebody stood up and gave a talk, and in the end, it was just starting to go horribly. The talk was going horribly wrong because it was around, they want to do this. And we're like, well, who would govern that? And who would oversee that? And they went, oh, we'd have a council of people, of like really nice people. And the entire audience just looking at this person going, you're what? So the Council of Really Nice People became an in-joke. So we have a Council of Really Nice People, but the council is four people sit up on the stage and we ask topical questions, stuff that's been in the news, and say, what do you think about it? So there'll be stuff about like, how does phishing work? Do you think phishing campaigns internally are a good thing or a bad thing? Here's a thing from the news. Was it good or bad? What should
it be? A bit like your own mock the week, but cyber related.
Yeah, it is. And it is that. And you have a student, because there's like students and graduates there, and there's people that have been in the business for like 20 odd years. There's only like between 30 and 50 people at it. So you end up having this like really bizarre mix of people. Sometimes there's non-cyber people there, which we pull them up anyway, because you've came to learn, so you can learn by doing. And so you end up sitting there going, so you get some really interesting viewpoints. And to be honest, there's very few rules. There's a be nice to everybody, don't sticker the venue or damage the venue in any way, because we don't want to get kicked out. And yeah, we've kind of got a rule that nobody from the Hack Thursday group actually talks. So it's not about us. So while we run it, we try and we'll create the slide decks and things like that. We let everybody deal with it. And so we're never on the panels. We never do the slideshow rights. We never do the talks. But we bring people in. We've had many a friend come up from various people from various places. Sometimes even outside of the UK, we've had like visitors come across and do talks just because of the community thing. So they go, hey, there's a really good excuse. So, and we've got Exabeam do a nice sponsorship for us. So they help keep the lights on. ID Cyber do it as well. And that's because personal relationships, and they've gone, hey, look, you're doing a really cool thing. Can we give you money to help run it? And we're like, sure, because otherwise the money comes out of our pockets. But yeah, so we've got a sponsorship that basically allows us to pay for the venue. And the rest of it is just, we just like bring people in and everybody just has fun. And we have a really grumpy chef that comes out of the kitchen when anybody orders food and tends to shout Katsu Burger across, like while someone's trying to do some really serious InfoSec talk about, you know, like hacking like home assistants with lasers. And then this guy comes up and goes, Katsu Chicken Burger. But yeah, it's a lovely group, and everybody that comes up to visit always goes, I'm coming back. This is amazing.
I recommend it to loads of the caps lockers. There's a few customers that have said, we're in Edinburgh. I'm like, that's not far from Glasgow.
We have a ton of people come across from Edinburgh.
It's not that far on a train, tram.
It's metro. 45 minutes. And it's 45 minutes on the train. So they run till like stupid o'clock at night. And we're normally done like 10:30 because that's when the pub starts kicking us out of our room. And we go up and like, but yeah, the place loves us, although apparently Gerard did go the other Thursday night and they panicked thinking, and apparently they shouted, the hackers are here, and started scurrying about. And we're like, no, he was just there for a pint. It just happened to be a Thursday night and they panicked thinking that they'd forgotten to set up the room for us. So yeah, but apparently the hackers are here. So, but yeah, it's a lovely group of people, and we have like people coming in that just say, look, I'm really interested in learning about cyber or want to get into cyber.
And we need that community.
Yeah, and it was lovely. And it's one of these ones where you just suddenly go, you know what? It's not a massive amount of effort. It's effort, but it's not a massive amount of effort. And you get to have like that one night a month that, you know, I'm allowed out. And you go and you just go down, you just go, right? And yeah, if we see you come in and we don't recognize your face, you'll find that one of the five Hack Thursday people will end up like wandering across to go and say, hey, who are you? And do you know anybody? And if you don't know anybody, we just end up dragging them around everyone, going, hey, look, this is such. This is such. This is Carrie from ID Cyber. He's lovely. And you know, like, and you just sit and go, and yeah, and before you know it, you know, you've got like half a dozen at least new friends. And yeah, it's really nice, and people seem to enjoy it. So
would that be your advice for anyone who's new? Go and find a community. Just spoon feeding you here.
A lot of people say you must go and find a community, and I think must is a wrong word, but I think that because a lot of people are nervous, and it becomes that, right, getting mentorship or getting something, people respond in different ways. But yeah, I'd always encourage, I mean, going to B-sides and, you know, I've done a lot of mentorship of people doing their first talks for B-sides. That's great, because people go, right, I'm really nervous. They're like, it's B-sides. It's lovely. And it's the same with Hack Thursday. It's like, it's just a bunch of like lovely people. And nobody ever has a bad word to say about anyone. And there's no drama. There's no sales. There's no... Nobody's taking your email address because they are being paid.
They're not scanning you. Yeah.
And it just is just fantastic. And so, yeah, going along to community events, it's not for everyone. But I haven't met anyone that, if when you finally get them to go along to one, hasn't said, I'm really glad I did that. So, I mean, I've brought a lot of people along to their first B-sides or their first Hack Thursdays. And while they were really worried about it and like going into it, come out going, that was amazing. I want to do a talk next time. And you're like, off you go. Brilliant.
You're now fully initiated.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, that's a perfect place to wrap up. Thank you so much for being on the podcast and sharing your knowledge about what it's like to be in cyber.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
Hopefully you've enjoyed that episode, and if you've been inspired and would like to chat to us on the Be In Cyber podcast, do reach out to me.